Mr. Leisure?
Yes.
Could you please restate your full name and your ABC number for the record?
James Matthew Leisure, 22420.
Thank you, sir. And we're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a parole hearing today, and this would be for a general parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. And you become eligible for these on March 24th, so that was a couple of days ago, 3 days ago. I'd like to introduce the board to you. If you look on the video screen to your right, on the end, the opposite end from me, is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Next to him, the Honorable David Neal. Right next to me here in the middle is our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. And my name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing today. I'd like to just start with a brief review, sir, and I'll just ask you periodically to correct me if I have something wrong. You're serving, you're currently 57 years old, is that right, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And serving, the current sentence that you're serving is 21 years for the crime of attempted first-degree murder. And this occurred on January 25th, 1980. Were you about 19 years old when this happened, sir?
I was about 18.
18 years?
That's not the date.
What was the date, sir?
It was like January 19th, I believe.
January 19th? Okay. There were three different murders, and I may have, or there were two.
Yeah, there were two.
So the attempted was January 20th. January 20th, not the 25th. Okay, I'm looking at your sentencing document. Okay. So you were about 18 when that happened, and you were sentenced on February 13th, 1981. And it looks like you appealed your conviction, but your conviction was upheld in September of 1982. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so. I don't see any prior criminal history, and you were pretty young when this happened, sir, so I'm not sure. Had you gotten in trouble before that as a juvenile?
Well, I was a juvenile.
Okay, all right. Okay, so you had some kind of a little probation. And were you on that probation at the time of this incident, sir?
Yes.
Okay, so you were on probation at the time. Okay. And also, Mr. Leisure, I want to point out, you have a sentence ending date for this particular, for the attempted murder, December 24th of 2020. You have a sentence end date on this conviction. And then my understanding, and Mr. Chairman may correct me, is that you would then revert back to the life sentence?
He's eligible. Both of the first murder charges are parole eligible. And so this third one, when he comes in here, when it becomes parole eligible, that makes him parole eligible. Actually, so okay. if we granted a parole, he would go on the street.
Okay, I wondered why this was 412A. Thank you.
Which explain that outcome here.
Okay, thank you. All right. So, Mr. Leisure, you have pretty limited discipline history in prison. You've only got two majors. And how long have you been in prison, sir?
A little over 39 years.
So that's actually pretty remarkable. We see many people who have a lot worse record than that. So somehow you've learned how to stay out of trouble in prison. And there are a couple of minors. Charges that you received recently. One was in January of 2017 for unauthorized smoking. And what was that? Were you smoking off the place, or what was happening there?
Well, I walked in the room with a cigarette, and I was headed to the bathroom as I put it out, but it was still stupid.
Right. Arizona changed the smoking laws, so, okay, so. And then there's another one for in April of 2015 for theft. And what was that one about, sir?
What year was that?
That was 2015, in April.
Okay, was Eastern Union, I thought it was going to tell me I could take out a little bit of bleach, and when I got outside, I tried to tell my friend, he said that I didn't have it, but to me, we can't, we're not really allowed to take anything out, so.
Okay.
Okay, so shows the three conditions is no, there's no.
All right, so you had some bleach that you were not allowed to have?
Yeah, I brought it to you when I passed it.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, and it looks like you've been before the board before, and you were actually granted parole, 412B parole, back in 2006. You've completed some programming, Design for Living, Thinking Straight, Cultural Diversity. Did you finish your GED, sir, while you were in there?
Yes, I did. And she was and counselors told her that.
Yep.
She also had my liberal arts degree on there.
Yep, you've got a degree, and it looks like you've been participating in AA?
Yes.
Okay. And your release plans reflect that you would live with either your mother or your niece, and you'd probably be able to get a job at Fry's with the help of your niece.
Yeah, it's not positive, but,
right.
I was looking to find something.
Okay.
I've been doing this for a long time, so it's probably going to take me a minute. But I'm not afraid to work.
Okay, sir. And you've had jobs while you've been in prison. It looks like you've been working steady with a lot of different... You have quite a job history with corrections.
Yes, I was a clerk for the college, the City of Arizona College in Florence, and they gave me a key for this little room that I could keep the computer and the copy machine and all that stuff. And it's not they had a lot of trust in it. I appreciated that.
Okay, but they trusted you a little bit. Okay, sir. All right. And I also want to mention that you have some supporters in the room today. How many? Five? And who's going to speak today? Anybody want to speak?
Two.
Two? Okay. All right. So you have some supporters here today, sir. And I also want to mention that the prosecutor is also here, and he'll get an opportunity to speak as well. So, Mr. Leisure, tell us, we nearly talked about the crime. What happened that day, or those days, because there were three different days, give us some background information, what was going on in your life, and what would lead you to do a thing like this? Sir, so tell the board about the crime.
I guess I would say that I was more of a father than a leader of my own life, and I'm not trying to blame anyone else. I'm just saying I got around the wrong influences and I went down the road. And, it got to the point where I didn't know how to turn around. And, what I did, it was very cowardly. I'm very ashamed about it. And I do regret what I did. I do want that on record, but I do regret what I did. Just out of respect for all the people I hurt. I know it doesn't make much difference, but I do want it on record. And I can just tell you, I was a selfish teenager and a father. That's really how I can sum that up.
So,
just
tell us about that. Did you have? These were, you were with friends, with other friends that were your age, or?
Yes, yes.
And how many of you were there?
Two. There were a few of them.
So three of all together, and were these older than you, or younger than you, or?
We were the same age.
Everybody's all the same.
Yeah, I was, they had a little bit of juvenile and jail time.
But you hadn't. You said you hadn't really gotten in trouble.
No, I hadn't.
So what?
When I just started high school, and I know it has GED on it, but I did that because I want to keep my water as fresh as possible.
Right.
Anyway, so anyway, I just started moving from high school, and I didn't really have any direction. So I was just hanging out with all my friends, and the two group that I got with and myself, and I'm trying to sound like Rosa, one thing just led to another, and
So what was your home like? Did you have a family? Did you have other people at home that you could talk to?
Yes, I did. Looking at it, I just wasn't very mature, and I was a teenager, just thought I knew everything, didn't want to talk, and then I was getting in trouble, I was getting scared, and I didn't know what to do. Well, I thought I was going to get some run, but I didn't want to run too, and then my whole life changed.
So these murders happened, or the two murders and the attempted murder happened over a few days. One of them was January 20th, one the 25th, and one was another day. I don't remember the date. So, which, I'm sorry?
It was in a two-week span.
It was all in a two-week span? So after the first one happened, sir, why did you not... I mean, what did you think after the first murder happened?
Okay, I actually thought that the friend I was with was joking around. He got a little medicinal, and after he was joking around, I think it was smooth enough for him that day. His dad hit him, and he was mad. His dad hit him because he liked his dad about having a job, and he didn't actually have a job. His dad hit him, and when he carried that gun around like it was a trophy, and he said, let's hitchhike and see where we can go. And we're hitchhiking, and I didn't think this was actually going to be going. And then he did that, I was just kind of scared of it. And when it happened, it's like, I didn't know what to do.
Well, how did it happen, sir? Did you argue with somebody? Was it just somebody that you ran across and did you know the person?
It was just two of us that night.
Oh, two of you, okay.
Yeah.
And did you know the person?
No.
So how?
So you randomly picked
somebody, and did you decide you were going to shoot him, or what happened? Was there an argument? What happened?
We went out to just hitchhike, just slowly,
sure.
And we didn't have a problem with a lot of people running from them. And when the gun was possessed by my friend, and he had an argument with his dad that day, I don't know how angry he really was, but the guy hit himself, and he talked to him for a little while, and then the friends won't be around until they get in somewhere in the line or something. And I just sat there, I'll be honest, I just sat there, I was wondering how far he was going to go with it. And, I didn't try to stop it, I didn't try to do anything. It was just, I guess you'd say, right on the fence. And they threw the young man in the trunk of the young man's car, and then we drove out to, just past the city limits of Chandler. And then I turned that out and opened up the trunk. And I said, we should just go from the river. And he didn't say anything, he took the dude out to the side of the road. And then I heard two or three gunshots. And then I heard the young man groan after the first shot. It sounded terrible, and there were two more shots, and then it was quiet. And I drove back to the car, and I think we said a word, and then we got me up in my house, and I
So you didn't think of calling the police and telling them what happened?
I thought a lot of things I could have done. I just didn't know anything.
So how did then that murder happened, and then how did you come to do, you know, be a part of the second one?
We screwed up the school society, but we would, if so people would pin something like one of the children or older people, oh, there was just a particular person that we could do it to. And the second man picked, he came to a stoplight, and we were standing there, and he nodded to us, and we got in the car, and we thought he nodded to us, but I don't know. Looking back, he thought he nodded to us, we got in the car, and drove away, and took him out, kind of out of the city, and then the gun was pulled again, and he was put in the trunk, and we got South Mountain, where my family had me to go, and he said, "Mason's going to." And I took him off the road when I shot him.
Okay. And then what happened on the third incident, the third event?
The third incident was when we were scared. The third one had just come back from Oregon. And I was hanging out, and I told him what I had done, and I wasn't bragging, I was letting them know a fact, someone I could trust, and, you know, see how I thought about it, and he didn't believe me, and he said he wanted to come with us, and I was just following that sort of model, that's the direction I went, you know, I was a man, I just followed. And he said, "Want to come with us?" We ride him along. He was only going out hitchhiking. A young man picked us up. And so we same thing. He said, "We didn't have any bullets in the gun." So it was very bad. We didn't have to, but we beat him up. And then we dragged him to the road, and there was his own vehicle, and then we dragged him back up to the field. We were at an alfalfa field. We tried to cover him up a little bit, and then we stabbed him in the head and torso. And then we met the scene.
Mr. Leisure, who ran over him with his own car? Who drove?
Derek.
Okay. Yeah. Was this the third person that had just joined you?
No.
He was the first one that had the gun?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, sir. And so it still didn't occur to you to call the authorities, or?
No. I mean, yes, it occurred to me, but I was scared, and I knew I was guilty. And I was just alone. My mind was in a hiatus, I guess.
Right.
I was just going to do it.
So this
was, you know, I was bad, too, so.
So, Mr. Leisure, how did you get caught? What happened the day you were arrested?
I believe my mother had found out about it, and she called one of the friends I was out with that night when it happened. She called his parents and his dad, and so they decided to go and ask the Catholic priest what they should do. But, you know, it's totally imagine what they had to be thinking. And of course, he recommended that they call the police, and the police said that they were afraid they called the police. police, they don't know how we began, they tried to run, which means we could have been shot. So my mom kind of arranged it with the channel PD, where she told her OD, and they came up and made their arrest without an incident. It was, they were just there for a look, and, you know, that was it.
Okay.
I stayed with her and cut me up, just went to jail.
And do you know what happened to you, the other people that were there with you?
Yes. Mr. Burrows was executed in 1991, and Joe and Seamus, the judge broke him alive because he knew he wasn't involved in these other incidents, and they didn't really partake in the last murder that we did.
Right.
So eventually he got his knocked down to, I think it was second degree, and he was paroled out. I did see him a few more years after that in here, when I was in East Union, he got picked up for shot, but he didn't miss.
Okay. All right, so, what is it about you that's changed? What, how are you different? Why should this board consider paroling you today?
I'm tired, and, you know, I really want to be here, I try not to waste my time, but I'm not a machine or a monster. Every day I think about what I did, and, you know, the first few months I was kind of letting me down, I wasn't, didn't really want to think about it, and after time I learned to just accept it and look at it from the point of view that a good person would look at it, you know, and, you know, it was best for me to do that, to understand a lot better, to understand what I did, why I did it, and how I want to start thinking differently. You know, more positive things, and just stay busy. And, but, you know, I don't want to forget what I did. I have no intentions of ever breaking the law. Again, I just need a real cheer since then. You know, I don't participate in any of the games that are going on here, the politics. I've never had the trouble where we had to protect the custody or old people that are running. I just do it all the time, and I try to do it constructively. You know, and I think that will carry on to when I'm out there. You know, like I said, I'm not afraid to work. I always look for the best jobs. And I work hard to keep those jobs. And before I moved to Tucson, I went to ACI. Most of my jobs were with ACI. And there's so much jobs out here, but I still was not taking any classes. I try to stay fresh. I can't get into it like that. I can't take 5 or 6 classes like I used to, just wear down a bit old age, but I still have a positive outlook on life, no matter how my life ends up. I just want to be positive and not hurt anything around me and get along with people, help people if I can, or just stay out of the way. I have no more desire to be around people that want to be trying, or desire to just stand by. You know, I have no question on the road. People that are not conducted with me on that, I'm not staying away from this. I do get here every day. More of the killers, more of the junkies around, you know. And I can coexist with them, and we respect each other, but I don't hang out with them because I don't have anything in common with them. You know, when I came to the gym, it was like I was kind of
Okay, Mr. Leisure, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have questions. Mr. Quinones has a question for you.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. I do want to just stop for a second on a point of clarification, and that is, I know it came up at the beginning of the hearing, but he's looking at an SED for everything in 2020?
I don't understand that.
Okay, I guess the second thing, or the reason why I bring this up is, I don't understand what happens with his parole regarding the earlier crimes if he is released. I mean, if his clear sentence end date is 2020, is he on parole for the...
I would have to ask for clarification.
Oh, well, I mean,
if he, the last sentence that ends in 2020, ends in 2020, whether he's in prison or whether he's on parole.
Yes.
The life sentences remain intact. If we parole him to this now, our release would put him out on parole or home arrest, and he would be there and he would have to come back for, you know, for more parole hearings to determine whether he's, you know, whether he would go from home arrest to regular parole, or whether he goes
on the release or
on the move.
Okay.
Because everyone's going to be ended. But it'll end on, in 2020, whether he is released or not, and the two life sentences remain intact until such a time as he receives an absolute discharge, if he ever gets it. It's confusing.
Yes, and that's what it is, and I do apologize for assuming.
No. I went directly to the leader of the time comp people and asked him that question.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Leisure?
Yes.
I do have a concern here, and that is that in 2006, you were granted parole to your next consecutive sentence for a capital crime. And you stated that it was cowardly, and I appreciate where you've arrived, but I mean, it was more than cowardly, it was heinous. It was a heinous crime, unspeakable, really. And after you were granted parole to your next consecutive sentence in 2006, within that same year, after a long period of having no discipline for about 12 years inside the Department of Corrections, there was a minor for horseplay, a major for disrupting count, a minor for disobeying verbal orders, another one for disobeying verbal orders, pardon me, I'm getting tongue twisted, promoting prison contraband in 2014, in fact in 2015. Why the sudden change in behavior after you were shown leniency? Please explain this to me.
I can tell you that, you know, I understand what you're saying. I was raised in this place, and the county bill was a cigarette lighter that you can get off the water for a couple packs of cigarettes. The horse playing was, I didn't think there was anything wrong, it was playing around, and some guards don't care, some guards do, and it's pretty much, I was dumb as anything too. Sometimes I just feel around and keep up with the youngsters, but I didn't think it was that much of a problem.
So hold on one second. I'm really not asking you to account for every event. It's something broader, which is the concern to me is, as I see it, that you behaved well until you got what you wanted. And then you reverted to poor behavior inside the prison system. That's my concern. So what was going on after being granted parole to your next consecutive sentence that would encourage you to lash out? It makes no sense to me.
I think with the term we were having, but before he was released, I was that has been time to do, and get through the first sentence, and, I really don't know the explanation, I really don't know how to say it, but just, I thought I probably came with the tough part, because I'm going to be violating any second on a 25-night or on a 14. I wasn't trying to get in trouble. It's not like I get in the fights or do drugs or stuff like that, but I can be a violator, been here since I was 18, and I don't always make the right decisions about, institutionalizing being a person.
Well, sir, if I may, go ahead, sir. I was going to say, if I may, my concern is if you are released to the community on home arrest or parole, your ability to adhere to the conditions of home arrest or parole. That's what I'm really getting at. And that is the question of whether you're, regardless of how long you've been inside the Department of Corrections, it's a serious question as to whether someone is capable of adhering to the conditions of supervision. And I'm going to hand it over to my other colleagues at this point. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions at this point? Okay. Dr. Wright has a question for you.
I'm just trying to, and I know you've already asked this for the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse, but could you answer it again? It's the same question that you've already answered, so I admit that, but I'm still a little confused with the three, well, the two murders and the other one conspiracy to commit murder. And they were not done on the same day, but they was done a few days apart, over a period of 2 weeks, I think. Why did you continue after that first murder? Why wouldn't that be the end of it? You know you committed murder, or a part of committing murder with your co-defendant. Why did you go for number two and then conspiracy for murder? I just can't comprehend why that would happen, sir, since it was not the same day. If it had been the same day, I would not approve, of course. I would not approve. It would make a little sense to me, but it doesn't make sense to me that you, one, two, three, not the same day, with the same co-defendant. Why would you do something like that, sir? You understand what I'm asking, sir?
Yes. I don't need to give you a concise answer. I know the answers were, cowardly, tedious, gross. I just don't remember what I was thinking then. I know that I was messed up on drugs, but that's not my details. But I'm saying to help climb over the fear and the guilt that I felt about it. And I just traveled along. So after the first one, I felt like that was just in a place of return. I wasn't. But I was with a friend, and it just, I didn't know what to do. I couldn't win because I'd have to worry about him for the rest of my life. And I didn't want to call the police because he's my friend. And I kind of just got, I was weak and went around with it. That's what I was going to say.
May I ask you this way then, sir? Who is the main leader? When you have at least two people involved, someone is the leader and someone is following the leader. So who is the leader? Were you the leader or whether your co-defendant was the leader, sir?
I don't know. I would say that my co-defendant would make suggestions or say something, and I would just go along with that. I mean, sometimes you make decisions I didn't want anything to do with, but once Mr. Somerville had been shot, I feel like I was just in a tight spot. I didn't know what to do. I knew that what was right to do, but I did not do that. So, after losing someone murdered and your friend wants to stay close to you that did that, you just became inseparable, and then I just followed him. When you want to do that, or I said, see, no, tonight's not a good night, or something like that, because I just didn't want to be involved in it. But basically, I knew that if I did, I might have to worry about him for the rest of my life. And I was just a confused teenager. Didn't know how to put all these wires in the right place together and do what was right. It just kept running from the problem.
Okay, so let me just ask one other quick question, and sorry for time management purposes. I believe you stated, and if I misheard it, then you correct me, sir. I believe you stated that you had just finished high school. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
And let's suppose that, for a moment, that these crimes had not been committed. What were your plans at that time for your future? You know, usually when you finish high school, you have a plan. I'm going to college, or I'm going to the military, I'm going out to get a job, I'm going to do something. So what was your plan if you had not committed this crime, sir?
I didn't really have a plan. I just knew that I was free, and I had a long life in front of me to make good choices, but I didn't know where to plan. Actually, I was a little scared because I didn't know what to do after high school, and I didn't know how to plan. I knew that I had years of freedom ahead of me, and life hadn't even begun. But I guess I did not think about what your person should have.
Let me ask this then, and then this will be my last question. If this board were to release you, what's your plan now, sir? I know you said you're going to work at Fry's and, you know, with your family, but what's your plan now, let's say? Because you're still a relatively young man, so what's your plan, let's say, 5 years from now, if this board were to release you? You say you didn't have a plan when you finished high school, so what would your plan now be, sir?
Plan within myself to go slow, take one day at a time, and try to be comfortable within my own skin and make my family proud. I don't know what I would do. I know I need to go slow and get used to civilization again, but I would try to just find a decent job and, you know, basically, you know, take care of myself and pay my own bills, and hopefully maybe get Christmas gifts for my nephews and nieces. I don't have a big outstanding plan. I just want to go down the right path step by step, and as quickly as I can, but, you know, not too fast, because I don't know what to expect that day, so I need to go slow, you know. My expectations are real big, but I don't ever want to come back to prison whenever I'm released. And so that's, I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out a lot of things. So I'm not trying to be more materialistic on anything. I just want to get out of my citizen and just enjoy the, you know, the few last years of my life. Hopefully it's not short, but, you know, That's just a great idea. You know, I stayed in the room, some of the old school doors, and the old room, and stuff, and John Pearson had to buy it. And I went to the back to that room. I went, you can't go in with other people. I can take care of yourself and just, you know, you know, I have your peace, and I don't bother anybody. And I just, you know, I can help my family, or either for them. And it's really just a simple plan that I have, this, or that I don't want.
Okay, so I certainly appreciate your time, and thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse, for allowing me an opportunity to ask these questions. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Leach, we've come to the point in your hearing where I'd like to give your supporters an opportunity to speak for you. So I don't know who wants to come first. But if you'd just come right up to the podium here, and is that green light on the microphone? Okay, good, thank you. And if you'd start by just state your name and then tell us what you'd like to tell us. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Jackie McGregor. I am, I've always known him as Uncle Matt. I'm his niece. So I kind of worked on it. Sorry, I'm nervous. I really hate public speaking.
It's okay, just relax.
Shows how much I love this man. my uncle has expressed to me several times how much he regrets what he's done. And there would be more supporters here, but we did not want to spread illnesses. and I have two more little ones that we felt it would be best if they were at school instead of here. I know that my uncle wants to be a productive member of society. He has asked me numerous times what places would hire felons. I have looked into it, my stepmom has looked into it, and we have found several call centers that would hire him. I have talked to the managers at Fry's. I'm not on a first name basis at Fry's because I live there practically, and I also do Instacart, which is grocery delivery. On top of, I work at All Aboard America, and the HR director told me that once we find out the results of this hearing, if my uncle does get parole, to come in and talk to him, and he would see about getting him on the bus detailing. So he'd be working nights cleaning the buses for All Aboard America, Harris Auction Casino, and he would be around kids, helping them learn new things. I know that my uncle, he has missed a lot of things. He wasn't there when my grandfather passed away. And in 2016, my mom passed away due to a result of an abuser. And in my opinion, he killed her. And we had to go down. Sorry. My grandma and I had to drive down the Saturday after my mom passed away to tell him that she was gone. And he was so brokenhearted that he couldn't be here to protect his sister, that he couldn't help her when she needed the help. My uncle has been more of a father to me than my own father has, even though he's been in prison. I found a box of letters that he's been writing to me. They go from writing in print all the way to cursive when I was learning cursive. And in those letters, he shared his love of history with me and his love of education. And I honestly believe, you asked what he would have done, I honestly believe he would have been a history teacher, because how much he loves history and how much he is always wanting to learn. Honestly, if I could afford to pay for him to go for more classes, I believe he, or my grandma could afford all
also, he would have his master's or doctorates. And he, I have also found that he can get some benefits for being an inmate to go to Mesa Community College and extend his education there. And I know that he wants to learn about all the technology out here. I mean, he's been in there for 39 plus years. I mean, so many things have changed. We now have cell phones, we have self-driving cars, we have sinks that turn on by themselves. So I know that there's so much that he's gonna have to adjust for, and we are here to support him and be there for him. It's, I want him to be a part of my children's lives where they don't have to go through metal detectors, and you know, I don't want to have to worry that if somebody steps out of line at the prison that my children could be harmed. And I know that that's one thing that he has been concerned about also, and which is why we haven't visited him since he's moved to the smaller yard, because he does not want an unsafe situation to happen with my family. My children age from 15 to 5, and I was, my oldest was there during the last parole hearing in 2006. I was pregnant with him. And we have been there. I have been there to support him all of my adult life. And I will continue to support him for the rest of my life, the rest of his life. And I know my husband supports this also. So thank you.
Well, thank you for coming today. Any questions for Ms. McGregor? Thank you so much. Good morning. Welcome. Please state your name.
Rosemary Leisure.
And what would you like to tell the board?
Go back to the arrest board when I made the call to. I had learned about it from Joey's sister, the one that came back down from Oregon. And I made the call, but his dad was Catholic, so we met at the Catholic rectory, but I had our pastor, I called him, and so he joined my husband and myself. And of course, they said that we had to call police. Now, I really didn't know what else to do. I mean, I knew that he was aiming to get himself killed somewhere, and he also was afraid of there's a certain amount of fear he had toward Derek, and that they were probably going to run, and I just figured eventually Derek would end up killing him. I know that the parole officer, I think that would be the parole board, who was at before, he said he had been to other executions, and he had he never lost any rest over this one. He said, I didn't lose a wink of sleep, because he said, I knew that Derek was the evil one. And I know that Matt just got in with a very bad guy. About 9 months after the court and stuff, Matt made a plea bargain, for which, are you Ben Zimmerdino? And I guess I owe Ben Zimmerdino a bit of an apology, because he wanted me to talk to him before he went to court. And Derek, Matt had already made the thing. He said Matt had already made that, so he's out of that. I'm sorry, I called him Matt, because there's me, James, and Jimmy's in the family. I carried him for 13 months, 13 years. I was given a rubber dolly in the second grade, and I named him Jimmy for my next oldest brother, and said, when I get married, I'll marry a guy like my next oldest brother, and my first child will be a son. He was born the day before James' birthday. But anyway, James had a Jimmy, and we were close to his wife's family, who had some Jameses and Jimmys in them, and a married Jimmy. So we called him Matt. Anyhow, Matt was a really good boy. He was so dependable and accountable, and I just, you know, it floors me that I think I was in shock for years after this happened. But anyway, I went and talked to Mr. Imbrudino because I felt like maybe, you know, the other lawyers, I had a new joy and was concerned with Joy and his family. And so I felt like, I knew his dad had remortgaged his house so he could hire an attorney for him and whatever. And so that was the reason why the main reason why, because I really felt like Derek was a pretty evil guy. But I was going to say, about 9 months after it happened, a guy came to our house, and he's talking to us. He knew Matt, and he knew Derek, and he said, I used to run around with Derek until he started killing people. And I said, wait, what? And I said, what are you kids protecting other people when they break the law and do such hideous things? So I don't know if Derek had been involved in other crimes. I don't know what happened. But all I know is my son got sucked into it. My son killed someone, and someone killed his sister, my daughter. It took her 6 years to die of the brain damage, but she was aware, knew all was happening. And we watched her go downhill till she couldn't talk and take care of herself. But she knew everything that was happening. And then Matt didn't really talk a lot about drugs, but about a year maybe prior, I knew something was going on with them, and I tried to find out what was going on. And by the time I learned everything, well, he was waiting to go to this thing to go on a, I don't know, adult diversion program. And they had this problem, they had that problem. They were trying to get into this building. And so it took until just shortly before I learned of this. And the rest came. And they accepted him and that, but then, you know, then that was, it didn't matter. Had gotten into more of it. That was when I wanted to talk to him. I was saying, okay, we're going to get in there and I'm going to tell him, look, he's got some drug or alcohol issue, something is going on, and you need to help him from that point. And then this happened, and I really didn't have the dates very clear in my mind until today, and I realized then that if they had gotten him in there earlier, he wouldn't have been that involved with Derek then. So Matt, it was like Abby was in prison. It was like 2 or 3 years, maybe more, before I start seeing little Matt come back. Because evidently whatever he was doing with the drugs, it was affecting him. And it was almost like they had a wall between him and everybody. I couldn't break through that wall. And so then, after that, he started coming around and being more like the old Matt. And I see that accountability and responsibility in him has come back. And he has always worked. He's hated to ask me for money to help him, but you know, they'll pay an awful lot upon it. So I haven't, you know, poured a lot of money into him. Because he has stayed consistent with his working in that. Some years back, when he got into jail, he met a guy there named Fred. My mind went blank on his last name. Fred Thomas, yes. And so about the whole 25 years, he knew Fred. And Fred helped him and protected him. And so we did things for Fred. He had a hobby shop, and he's very good with his hands and made beautiful work and that. So I would get him wood and whatever and take down there, and Matt would kind of hang out with him and help varnish it and stuff like that. But Fred was very knowledgeable and knew lots of things, mechanics, building. So it come time for Fred to get out, and Fred's family's in Oklahoma. I think he might have brothers somewhere in Oregon, I don't know, but I mean Arizona. Anyway, Matt wanted me to help him because he'd helped Matt a lot too also through the years and protected him. So I helped him get out, and he went up north with me and got him going, and then he, you know, started building his own life and everything. Never got in trouble. Sometimes I got irritated with him. He never really, you know, committed any crimes, and he never took up drinking and drugs like that either. So he worked pretty good on doing, take care of himself.
I want to make sure we have enough ample time, but can we just for the, you know, in the interest of time, if you could kind of sum it up.
Yeah.
As far as coming to live with me, I have a little issue if he has to be on an ankle bracelet or something. I live on 76 acres up north, and I'm off the grid, so I would have to, I couldn't even get a phone. I think someone told me that you had to be hooked into the phone, a designated line for it. So if that was the case, he really couldn't come with me, although I could really use his help, and my memory fails me because of stress. It's not Alzheimer's or something like that. But it would certainly be nice if he could eventually get to that place. But my main thing is seeing him get started and being able to make it on his own. And that's...
Thank you so much. Any questions for Ms. Leisure? Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
And anyone else want to speak today? No? Okay. Then Mr. Imbordino? Thank you. And please just state your name.
Vince Imbordino.
Thank you, sir.
40 years later, I'm still a prosecutor with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. I was here, so I don't remember whether Dr. Wright was here 12 years ago. I don't recall.
No, sir.
So I'm fairly certain that none of you were here.
No.
But I was here. Obviously, I wasn't very persuasive. I spoke against the parole. And, you know, back then, there were also some family members here. They had either written in or called. I can't recall. Mr. Gentry was here on his own. He was the victim of the attempted murder. I can't recall what everyone said, but they were opposed to the parole. And I appreciate the fact that he has family members here who support him. I never had any information back in 1980 or 1981 that there was anything about his family life that led to these crimes. So I'm sure that his mom was, the same good person she appears to be today. I can't revise history. So, as I stand here today, I have to tell you I am as biased as I can be with respect to this defendant and the crimes that he committed. And I hope that doesn't come as a surprise to either the board or his family. I was there because I was on call. I was in the field where Mr. Schwartz met his death. And I think, I believe that all of you have a copy of the pre-sentence report. I don't know if you do or you
yes.
don't. And what I would point out to you, one thing is, there's a couple things I need to clarify. I think I need to clarify. Number one, with respect to once Mr. Schwartz was killed, the report says the car became disabled or broke down. Well, what happened was when this defendant, this inmate, and Mr. Encinas had finished beating up Mr. Schwartz and drug him up on this road next to the canal, Derek Garlaw drove the car on and over Mr. Schwartz. And Mr. Schwartz was a very young man. He wasn't much older than this defendant. He had an injury. He had to use a crutch to get around. He was no threat to these folks. In any event, Mr. Verlaw, as this defendant, if Mr. Insignia's helped make sure that Mr. Schwartz couldn't get away, Derek Verlaw spun the wheel of the car over Mr. Schwartz's body so long and at such a great rate of speed with the brake on that it completely tore the tire off the rim. So that's why they couldn't drive very far. And then Mr. Roach was nice enough to stop and give him a ride. There's no doubt in my mind that we're going to do the same thing to Mr. Roach. But that gun wasn't loaded. And so after they had come to a location where they thought would be a good place to take care of Mr. Roach, they all got out of the car first, or his truck first. That was a mistake. Ordered Mr. Roach out, and Mr. Roach was smart enough, in this case, to drive away. So he was still alive. There's something else I was going to tell you about this particular. Well, also in the pre-sentence report, I think it indicates, and perhaps over the years, Mr. Razor has forgotten, but told the pre-sentence writer that there was a plan to go out and rob somebody and carjack them. So it wasn't just a spur of the moment thing. This was a plan. And you can talk about how maybe Mr. Verlaw was the most evil. And quite frankly, back then, I didn't see any difference. Maybe you do. I'm not aware. No one came to us. No one gave any information. This defendant, when he confessed, did not claim that. And the only reason that this defendant hasn't been executed is because his confession was suppressed. Because one of the detectives during the interview talked about the death penalty, which they weren't supposed to do. And so the judge determined that the confession was not voluntary because it was only given as a result of perhaps being afraid that he was going to get the death penalty, and so I better tell them, you know, what they want to know. That's the law. I didn't quarrel with it at the time. We had a hearing on it. Judge Brown made a ruling, and that's what we were left with. So then what happened was we took the crime scene specialist back out to the MCSO car lot where Mr. Schwartz's car was parked, reprocessed the vehicle again, and found this defendant's palm print in the blood of Mr. Schwartz on the passenger side door. And as a result of that, and as I stand here today, I still regret that I didn't try this case against this defendant, but I didn't. We decided that rather than risk not having enough evidence, just that bloody palm print, to enter into this plea agreement. And the law provided 25 to life and provided an opportunity for parole, which is what the previous board decided, I guess, was the appropriate thing to do. So I'm not going to stand up here and badmouth them. They made a decision that I didn't agree with, obviously. But can't change that. And I also want to correct a couple of things about the facts. First of all, his mother referred to this adult diversion program. This defendant and another friend, not Derek Verlaw, had stolen a bunch of stuff out of somebody's pickup truck. And there were theft charges pending against him. Our office had a diversion program at the time where he went into it, he went to counseling. I don't remember what, it's been too long ago. I don't remember what all happened. But before that case, would, assuming he completed it, then he would not have been charged in that case and there would not have been a conviction, even though it would have been a felony otherwise. Before that happened, these murders began. I don't want to talk too long, so I'm trying to short circuit this a little bit. But, you know, as we stand here today, all of us, when young people kill a bunch of people, we've kind of become, I'm not sure what word to use, but it's sort of almost become secondhand. It's like nothing surprises us anymore. In 1980, when these crimes happened, this didn't happen very often in Maricopa County. This was rare. Perhaps that's one of the reasons that I remember it so well. But the first thing you need to know is, and Mr., I know it's been a long time, Mr. Somerville was killed first. He was a young man. And that crime would not have been charged, but for the fact that we enter this plea agreement, we have reason to believe that Gerlach and Leisure were involved in it. We would not have had enough evidence to charge it, but as part of this plea agreement, we wrapped them up together. And that's why those sentences were made to run concurrent with one another. I don't know what Mr. Leisure did when Mr. Somerville was killed. You know, I think I heard him talking about it, but I was a little confused about which crime he was talking about. Somebody shot and killed Mr. Somerville. It was either this man or Derek Gerlach, I don't know which. But when Mr. Schwartz was carjacked, that gun wasn't loaded, and poor Mr. Schwartz made the mistake of grabbing the gun from Derek Gerlach, thinking that it was loaded and he was going to protect himself, which is when this man and Joseph Encinas and Mr. Schwartz then tried to get away. And he made it down to the canal bank. These two caught up with him and beat him up and drug him up on the road. Mr. Gentry's case was the last one that we knew about. Mr. Gentry was at a stoplight in Phoenix, and not out where these other crimes happened. I don't know how Leisure and Gerlach got to Phoenix. I guess somebody else hitchhiked them there and perhaps didn't get killed. They got into Mr. Gentry's car, had a gun again, but this time it was loaded. Poor Mr. Gentry was put in the trunk of his car, driven out into the desert, where Ahwatukee is now. There wasn't anything there but desert and this proving ground. And Mr. Leisure shoots him, thinking he's going to kill him. Mr. Gentry was lucky enough to survive, managed to crawl to a security officer at a gate and get help and live. So, and I apologize to the family for going through all these details that maybe they don't know about. I don't know if they do or they don't. But I remember them like yesterday. And I can tell you, Mr. Gentry was here 12 years ago. His life would never be the same. I suspect that's why he isn't here today. I went to the execution of Derek Gerlach. His grandmother was dead at that point. His grandfather was there, his father was there. His mother couldn't bring herself to go to the prison for it. I suspect Mr. Schwartz's grandfather is dead now. I don't know. I don't know the status of his dad. Someone mentioned that, Mr. Leisure has missed a lot. I like to think that I haven't completely lost my objectivity in all these murders over all these years that I've been involved with. There's way too many of them. Whether it's the victim's family or a defendant's family, invariably people are losing out. This family has lost out, but the people who are victims of this man, their loss is forever. So at some point, I know either this board or another board is going to release this man to the streets. And, I'm scared to think about that. I hope that whatever the decision is works out well. I certainly am concerned about the community. Your concerns, of course, are different than mine. You have a different job than I do. Your duties are different than mine. But when and if you ever let him walk away from the prison, please be very, very sure of your decision.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Leisure. We're coming up toward the end of your hearing, sir, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to make a final statement. If there's anything else you've thought of that, while you've been sitting there, and is there anything else you want the board to consider, sir?
Yes. I have no intentions of ever hurting you. I hope that, that whoever responds to that, I do feel bad for the families. I know it's not worth doing, and I believe me, it's not even worth that, but, I spend every day, thinking about it. And I'm not mistaken, their family was, and that's my fault. And I do feel bad about that. I deserve every second I've done in prison. And if the board doesn't approve me, I understand. That's needless.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Leisha, the board is going to go into discussion. We do all our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. We've not discussed your case before right now. So all we ask is that you just remain on the line, listen to the discussion, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Okay, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. The board is now in discussion. The case is just tragic on so many levels. Just the loss of life and the just the incredible waste of the life of someone who was, as he put it right in the early part of this hearing, a follower, not a leader, and just allowed himself to get pulled into something in this way. But there's a part of me that says, did he? Because as he described it today, his co-defendant committed the first murder, and when the second murder came, handed him the gun and said, it's your turn. And he did it. So I'm having great difficulty with that, and I would like to have a discussion with board members about this. So thank you, Mr. Quinones.
I'll keep it short. Rittenhouse, one of the first things that Mr. Rogers stated was that he had no intentions of hurting anyone. I just have a tough time believing that. And the follower piece I struggle with as well, because we really don't know the whole story. There are still holes as to who testified to what. And I'm deeply disturbed by the totality of the events that happened so many years ago, as well as some of the issues that I brought up about his behavior inside the Department of Corrections, especially after he was granted parole to his next consecutive sentence. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you. And Mr. Neal?
Yeah. It really does bother me, when the car broke down on one of the nights or days in question, because the tire came off, whatever reason it broke down, another person came around and gave him a ride, and they were trying to do the same thing then, but the other ones that they committed, they planned on. They planned them. It wasn't a random act, and it wasn't like they went to a liquor store to rob it, and one of them got trigger happy and killed somebody. It was planned, and they didn't plan on, from what the information we got, they didn't plan on leaving the victims tied up or anything. The plan was to get rid of the victims so they couldn't testify against them. But the other thing that troubles me, and this is always something that comes up, and it was alluded to by the prosecutor, and that's, we hear about he missed a graduation, he missed a death, he missed a birth, he missed this, he missed that, but the victims missed everything. And their family was not allowed to have any of those celebrations with that victim based on the actions of Mr. Leisha and his co-defendants. And with the totality of this, I just am not at all comfortable with the idea of him returning to the community at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wright?
Nothing further with my colleagues, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. Then I'm going to make a motion, and my motion will be that we deny general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest for Mr. Leisure. And based on the date of the crime, there's not a mechanism to ask for a one-year set-off, so the next parole hearing would be in approximately 6 months. But that is my motion.
Second. Agree?
I think I heard Mr. Neal first. Seconded by Mr. Neal, agreed, Dr. Wright, and Mr. Quinones. Reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life. I'm going to say serious and deviant offense because it was a recurring thing, as Mr. Neal just explained, a trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, multiple victims, violated previous probation and parole because he was on probation at the time. Repeat offender. I'm going to check for institutional behavior because we had tickets. First, we had the tickets that Mr. Quinones explained, and then we have tickets as recently as 2017. So, recent disciplinary infractions. I'm not going to check no community family support system because he does have a lot of family support, and it's evident that the family supports him very much. And I'm not going to check poor no, well, maybe I'll check poor no release plan because there really is not, there's not a concrete plan for it. It's a kind of a vague plan at this point. So Mr. Leisure? Back to you. You heard the board's discussion, and the board has voted to deny your parole at this time, sir. Did you hear the reasons for denial?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And the Department of Corrections will certify you again to come before this board in approximately 6 months. So we look forward to seeing you then. And otherwise, you know, continue with the good behavior. And we'll see you in about 6 months, sir.
Okay,
thank you. Your hearing is concluded.
And would you ask the